have a lot of leaders that make statements, but they don't produce paperwork with a signature on it saying, I'm the one who made this decision.
Proposed legislation to address misconduct in the National Guard. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 15th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, local restaurants struggle to offer health insurance for employees.
It's just hard for them to find it something that's affordable, that it just doesn't eat every bit of their profits.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
A review board has reversed the suspensions of two federal attorneys accused of withholding evidence in the prosecution of the late Senator Ted Stevens. The Merit Systems Protection Board ruled this month that the Justice Department bungled the disciplinary process against the two prosecutors. Joseph Bettini was facing a 40-day suspension. James Gokey was facing 15 days. Stevens' 2008 conviction was eventually tossed out amid charges that the U.S. attorneys violated court rules of evidence as they pursued the senator. Ironically, the attorney suspensions were tossed out because, the review board found, the Justice Department violated its own rules as they pursued the two prosecutors. The board said the department's procedural error occurred after an attorney assigned to review the case against Bettini and Gokey concluded they did not commit professional misconduct. Justice officials then reassigned the case to another attorney who decided the opposite and pursued the suspensions. The board said that violated the Justice Department's disciplinary process. The Justice Department can appeal. Two lawmakers introduced a group of bills today designed to fix issues within the Alaska National Guard. Anchorage Democrats Chris Tuck and Bill Wilikowski made the announcement at a press conference inside the new Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage. The first of the three bills aims to change reporting procedures in the Guard for crimes like sexual assault. It would also protect victims from retaliation and prosecute criminal cases in civilian, not military, courts. Retired Lieutenant Ken Blaylock blew the whistle on crimes within the Guard and says the measure would eliminate inappropriate actions that have been taking place for 20 years.
This type of thing would force a record of that, because you have a lot of leaders that make statements, but they don't produce paperwork with a signature on it saying, I'm the one who made this decision. So things are just dropped, and a victim comes forward and complains and is basically ignored.
Another bill revises the Uniform Code of Military Justice that guides legal procedures within the Guard. Senator Wilikowski says the highly technical document hasn't changed since statehood.
Right now, when there are offenses in the Guard, they're typically handled as personnel actions. By adding and changing the Uniform Code of Military Justice, we would be creating a criminal justice system within the Guard. I know people are concerned about cost. We've talked with Guard members. We think this can be handled by and large with the resources that the Guard has.
A third bill creates a legal mechanism for private companies to give veterans priority in hiring. No Republicans have signed on to the legislation. Representative Tuck says the absence of any Republican co-sponsors has more to do with timetables than with politics.
This isn't a one party versus the other party type of legislation. This is doing something what's best for all of Alaska. So we hope that going forward that we'll have a lot of support and a lot of ideas coming from the whole legislature.
The legislative session in Juneau starts Tuesday. As oil prices continue to plummet, some corporations are scaling back on expensive exploration projects, like drilling in Arctic waters. But as KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, one company with a major stake in the region has yet to tip its hand.
Within the last few months, a handful of oil companies have backed off from the Arctic. Chevron decided to stop seeking government approval to work north of Canada. And over in Greenland, Statoil gave back three of its four licenses to drill offshore. But Royal Dutch Shell has been quiet about whether it's still planning to go back to Alaska this summer for the first time in almost 3 years. Spokesperson Megan Baldino wouldn't comment on the role that oil prices will play in Shell's decision. But Foster Mellon, a global oil and gas analyst with Ernst & Young, says it's clear what they're up against.
Pretty much all companies, even the, you know, the big financially sound companies, are looking at very much reduced cash flows for the coming year. So discretionary spending, such as high-risk, high-cost exploration, is probably the first to be put on the shelf.
Unless the price of oil is above $80 a barrel, Mellon says it doesn't usually make sense to drill in the Arctic. Right now, the price is somewhere around $50. But Shell's investment in the Arctic might overshadow that. The company spent about $6 billion on its prospects in Alaska. And Malte Humpert, the executive director of the nonpartisan Arctic Institute, says that could spur them forward.
They might really assume that prices go back up, and it would take years anyways to develop the drills and actually get the oil out of the ground. But I think it would be a hard sell to weigh those short term roadblocks over long term potential.
Shell has walked away from the Alaskan Arctic once before, though. The company drilled several wells in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas in the 1980s, but according to a fact sheet produced by the company, it was, quote, too expensive to operate given the technology and the oil price regime that existed at the time, end quote. Shell didn't turn its attention back to Alaska for more than a decade. In 2005, the company started buying up leases again, eventually spending more than $2 billion on sites in the Chukchi Sea. Those leases have been the subject of a long-running legal challenge, and that could be the biggest hurdle Shell faces as they consider a return to the Arctic in 2015. John Callahan is a spokesman for the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management in Anchorage.
The court order prevents BOEM from formally processing, or what we call deeming submitted, this exploration plan from Shell. However, this court order also explicitly allows BOEM to work with Shell to get together and discuss ways that the plan can be improved. And that's what our people are doing.
The formal review can't start until the Secretary of the Interior decides whether to uphold the lease sale where Shell picked up big prospects in the Chukchi Sea. That decision is expected sometime in March, and that wouldn't leave a lot of time for oil markets to bounce back before Shell's Arctic fleet would have to head north to start their drilling season. The company is expected to provide more details on its plans for the Arctic and other ventures around the world during a quarterly earnings call with investors at the end of the month. And on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a couple from Kulwok plans an unusual wedding at an unusual spot.
Lisa said, we'll have it at the first basketball game. There's your time and your place. You set it up.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing are important to you, please consider applying for one of 35 seats open on your federal subsistence regional advisory councils. The seats will be filled by rural Alaskans who are knowledgeable about fish and wildlife resources in their region. Apply by January 23, 2015. Information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
2014 was a record year for tourism in south-central Alaska, according to Visit Anchorage. The organization predicts 2015 might be just as good. Visit Anchorage President and CEO Julie Saupy says the primary measure is bed tax collection. The municipality will pull in about $24.2 million this year, a third of which goes back to Visit Anchorage to market the city. Saupy says tourism to the region is bouncing back because of marketing efforts and general economic rebound.
I think there's a lot of consumer confidence. A lot of people are finally feeling that they might have a little disposable income after what we saw happen in 2008 and 2009, so there's a little pent-up demand.
Saupy says tour operators and sales staff foresee tourism continuing to grow in 2015. Cruise ships plan to bring an additional 33,000 passengers to South Central Alaska next year. Organizations are also booking many conferences in the region. Saupy says the increase in tourism is good for the entire economy.
You look at the tourists on the street, and yes, they're in our restaurants, our hotels, our gift shops. That's the easy layer to see. But all of those businesses have insurance. They have remodeling. They're, you know, using gas for the tour vans. It really does trickle to just about every corner of our community.
The city's bed tax also feeds into the general fund and helps pay for the city's convention centers. Starting this month, businesses in Alaska with more than 100 full-time workers have to provide health insurance. Next year, the requirement will affect even smaller businesses. And under the Affordable Care Act, full-time isn't any employee who works more than 30 hours a week. Senator Lisa Murkowski is co-sponsoring legislation that would change that threshold to 40 hours. APRN's Annie Feit reports that would be a relief to many business owners.
It's just after the lunch rush at Cross Bar in Midtown Anchorage, and sous chef Roy Martinez is grilling steak, plating french fries, and trying to make sense of a confusing order slip.
You know that my ticket says on-site add B. I'm assuming that's bacon, but all it says is B.
That B turns out to be code for brown gravy.
Brown gravy, bacon, you know.
Martinez does not get health insurance through work. But his boss, Crossbar owner Ken Ryther, would like to change that.
I would love to offer my employees that benefit.
Ryther bartended at the Beartooth Theater Pub and Grill for 12 years, where he had employer-sponsored health insurance. He knows health insurance helps keep employees around, which improves service and food quality. He also thinks it's the right thing to do. So when he opened Crossbar a year ago, health insurance was on his radar, but he says it just wasn't feasible.
There was no way we could afford healthcare in the beginning, given startup costs and a new business and managing cash flow and things like that.
Starting next January, Ryther may no longer have a choice. That's when the Affordable Care Act will require businesses with more than 50 full-time employees who work over 30 hours per week to provide insurance. Ryther says he's close to that threshold right now. The legislation Senator Murkowski's proposing would bump the definition of full-time to 40 hours per week, and that would make a big difference for Ryther.
Oh, it would definitely make life easier.
Murkowski's office has heard from more than 24 Alaska businesses who are concerned about the requirement, from restaurants, school districts, and plumbers. Murkowski says the full-time definition is forcing businesses to cut employee hours to under 30 hours per week to avoid paying a penalty. She says it doesn't make sense.
If you ask most Americans, if you ask most Alaskans what they consider full-time to be, they'll say 40 hours.
Some local restaurants already do provide health insurance. Moose's Tooth Pub and Pizzeria, which owns the Beartooth and Broken Tooth Brewing, has offered employees health insurance for more than a decade. Brooke Van Veckhoven is the human resources manager for the company, which has about 500 employees in Anchorage. Van Veckhoven says the owners who started Moose's Tooth in 1996 considered health insurance an important benefit and offered it within a few years of opening. But she understands why other businesses, especially restaurants, struggle to do the same.
We've been contacted by a lot of small local restaurants who would love to offer health benefits to their employees, even before the requirement by the government. And it's just hard for them to find it something that's affordable, that it just doesn't eat every bit of their profits.
That concern for the bottom line is very real for Crossbar owner Ken Ryther. As he considers potentially having to provide health insurance, he is also worrying about the minimum wage increase, which will take effect next month. He says at a certain point, the impact on his business becomes unsustainable.
Folks are going to be having to pay a whole lot more to go out to eat, which then they're probably not going to go out to eat. And if people don't go out to eat, you don't have restaurants. If you don't have restaurants, you lose a lot of jobs.
Ryther would like to see his business grow enough so that he can offer his employees health insurance. But he says he would rather have that be a choice than a government-imposed requirement. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
An obscure lawsuit filed by a Matanuska-Susitna Wetlands Mitigation Bank could have national implications. The suit, now in federal claims court, alleges breach of contract by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and land developers are closely watching the outcome. KSK's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Wasilla-based Pioneer Reserve, a wetlands mitigation bank, is suing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in federal claims court for $12 million. But the court's decision could have further reach regarding the enforceability of wetlands mitigation agreements. Pioneer Reserve is the first and probably the only family-owned wetlands mitigation bank in Alaska. The land bank was established by Scott Walther, a Wasilla landowner with holdings in the Hatcher Pass area. Walther worked with the Great Land Trust to place conservation easements on 166 acres of Little Susitna River drainage. The area is considered critical salmon habitat. Pioneer's manager, Callie Dawn, says Pioneer got full Corps of Engineer approval as a wetlands mitigation bank in 2011, and the two entities signed an agreement called a wetlands mitigation instrument.
When we signed our instrument, we had used a, you know, scientific methodology to determine how many credits we would get. And then we had a table of credits that we expected to have upon signing the instrument.
Don says Pioneer was initially assessed at 150 credits by the Corps through a process that involves a federal interagency review team. The credits can be sold to developers. Each of Pioneer's credits is worth $79,000. The trouble arose when the Matsu Burrows Rail Spur project filed with the Corps for wetlands fill permits in 2012. The Corps, in most cases, uses a wetland mitigation bank to offset a project's impact on water resources. The Corps at first directed the Burrow to purchase credits for the Rail Spur project from Pioneer. But then, the Corps inexplicably reduced Pioneer's ranking to only 17 credits.
We received an email saying that they felt that they had been incorrectly mapped.
Pioneer's land, now encumbered by a conservation easement, can't be sold or used for mitigation credits due to the Corps' sudden reversal. The borough had to purchase the bulk of its credits from a different company. Don says the sudden reduction in credits cost Pioneer $12 million, prompting the breach of contract suit against the Corps.
It left us with almost nothing, which is why we turned to litigation.
Pioneer filed suit last May. The Corps filed a motion for dismissal of the suit, claiming the wetlands instrument is not a binding agreement. But in November of last year, the federal claims court denied the Corps' motion, saying that Pioneer's complaint presents enough information to allege the existence of a contract. Now the court must decide on Pioneer's complaint, and implicit in that decision is whether or not the Corps' initial wetlands instrument with Pioneer is enforceable as a contract. Land bankers and land developers are watching the outcome, since establishment of a land bank is a long-term financial commitment, and trust in a bargain with the Corps is a must. Callie Dawn.
You know, it's been financially a huge hardship. So if we can get to the end of that suit and we can collect damages, then I think we continue to work with the Corps on other projects, and we expect to in the future. And I hope that they're working towards a better system that maybe doesn't have the pitfalls that some of the current system does.
Spokesmen for the Corps in Anchorage and in Washington, D.C. have withheld comments, citing litigation in progress. No court date has been set. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering dental innovations from implants and Invisalign with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
Alaska Pacific University is proud to announce the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University, a private nonprofit committed to personalized experiential learning that incorporates Alaska as its principal classroom. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
Governor Bill Walker has named two new deputy commissioners at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Former State Senator Joe Thomas, a Fairbanks Democrat, is taking one of the posts. Thomas served in the legislature for 6 years, and he was an official with a Fairbanks labor union for 2 decades. Greg Cashin has previously served as an assistant commissioner within the department and most recently worked for the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation. The University of Alaska Southeast closed its bookstore in Juneau at the end of last year because it hadn't been profitable for years. As the school looks ahead, UAS will need to make more tough decisions about its budget. KTOO's Lisa Fu reports.
Students at the UAS Sitka and Ketchikan campuses have long ordered textbooks through the school's official online bookstore or another website. Now, students in Juneau will have to do the same. Callie Connerton is UAS student government president. She says the closure of the bookstore isn't affecting how she buys textbooks. Connerton is in her 4th year at UAS studying elementary education. She tends to order books online anyway.
If I can get a book that is the older edition that still has 95% of the information and is $100 cheaper, I'm going to take that route.
Connerton says some students are upset by the closure, especially ones that sign up for or change classes right before the semester starts. They don't have the convenience of buying textbooks at the bookstore, but instead have to wait for them to arrive in the mail.
So it is a little bit hard. Shipping to Alaska, of course, from down south is extremely hard, but it's an adjustment period. It's a transition.
The bookstore has been on or near the Juneau campus since the early 1980s. In more recent years, it doubled as a gift shop and sold a lot more than just books. It had school and art supplies, dorm decorations, and work by local artists. It was also the place to buy UAS sweatshirts and gear. But UAS Vice Chancellor for Administration Michael Seary says the bookstore was simply not financially stable.
The bookstore had not been profitable for quite a few years, and it was increasingly unprofitable. And all of the projections show that it was going to be between $50,000 and $150,000 deficit ongoing into the future.
Starting in the fall of 2013, the university went through a lengthy process to review the bookstore operations. In May, officials made the final decision to close it. Seary says the bookstore's budget was around $770,000. The almost 4,000-square-foot bookstore was located in the same building as the school's administrative services and human resources departments. In the near future, Seary says the space will likely be used as temporary office space for staff while the Hendrickson building is renovated. Otherwise, he says UAS is actively looking at selling the building.
Not quite certain what the solution will be for all of the business functions that are in that building yet, but if we can find a way to use space more efficiently on campus and be able to accommodate them there, then we would have one less building to be maintaining, which in tight budget times would be advantageous.
And Seary says UAS needs to start planning for even tighter times. During the school's Christmas break, Governor Bill Walker asked all state agencies to look at the potential effects of a 5% and 8% budget cut. Seary says that translates into either a $3.4 million or $4.3 million reduction, or between 30 and 50 staff members.
That's the equivalent of the general funding we receive for a third of all of our academic programs. And so you can't do that without significantly reducing staff. Ideally, you wouldn't do it all through staff reductions. You'd find some other strategies to do it, like selling a building.
Seary says UAS is starting to look at budget-cutting measures, like a hiring freeze, and identifying how departments can save money this fiscal year. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
A couple in Kilwaukee has been engaged since 2001, but they couldn't quite come to an agreement about what kind of wedding ceremony to have. They finally settled on a unique venue, Center Court at halftime during tomorrow's home basketball game. KRBD's Layla Carey called up the couple to talk about their upcoming nuptials and has the story.
Lisa George definitely didn't want a traditional wedding with the church or the dress or any of that frilly stuff. Jared Barlow definitely didn't want to go to the courthouse with just a judge, a couple of witnesses, and no fanfare. How to get married then has been a topic of discussion for the couple for quite some time. Last fall, they finally made a decision.
Lisa said,
We'll have it at the first basketball game. There's your time and your place. You set it up.
That's another thing. The bride wants nothing to do with planning.
So I've been putting all the plans together and arranging everything, and all she's got to do is walk in and show up.
It's a bit of a role reversal. Traditionally, women tend to be more excited about planning weddings, but George says their relationship is not traditional.
I'm more into the typical male role, I guess, if you want to put it that way, and he's more of the female that likes the lovey-dovey, frilly things. So it works for us.
George has had minimal responsibilities. She had to say yes or no to a few things, but that's pretty much it. There's no wedding dress either, although there are rumors that a veil might end up pinned to her Kluwak chieftain's jersey.
I don't know. I just planned on being in my chieftain gear, and whatever my cousins and aunties and relatives figure it out, we'll go from there.
While George has stayed out of it, Barlow wasn't completely on his own when planning the wedding. Other residents of the tight-knit community of Kluwak have rallied to help.
It really hasn't been too much. The biggest issue that I've had was trying to make sure that my family from out of town could come up.
That includes Barlow's father, who's performing the ceremony and had a long 4-day trip from a village in Peru, where he's now living. Barlow says he met George online as he was planning to move to Kluwak. He'd started his Alaska residency in Sitka, drawn there by his sister, who was attending Sheldon Jackson College.
And she sent me a bunch of pictures of the water and the hillsides. And so I said, that's where I got to go. And I moved to Sitka in June of 99.
Barlow says the tourism in Sitka was too much for him. So about a year later, he moved to Prince of Wales Island. He wanted to find out more about Kluwak before moving, so he did a search on Yahoo Messenger. That's how he met George.
I've tried to duplicate that search since then and have never been able to duplicate a search to find her anywhere. So that one search was what did it for me in order to find her.
Now, about 15 years later, wedding bells will ring, or halftime buzzers will sound, as the couple finally ties the knot. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Lisa Fu in Juneau, and Layla Carey in Ketchikan. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Ann Hillman. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Enroll now in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly costs and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the health insurance marketplace. Visit GetCoveredAlaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska. The Federal Subsistence Board meeting is Wednesday, January 21st through Friday, January 23rd, 2015 at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center in Anchorage. The meeting is open to the public either in person or by teleconference. Public comments and input on the proposed changes to federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations is being sought, along with specific fisheries proposals. Meeting materials found at regulations.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.